Good evening, and welcome to the third episode of Talking of Bluestein Street. Today I have a really special guest because you've heard me in the past talk about people who I think are intrinsically funny as opposed to people who are just technicians and have learned how to tell a joke. Well, today we have an intrinsically funny person with us, and that is Monica Piper. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Steve. I don't feel intrinsically funny today. What do I do?
An enema?
Okay. You know, when Steve gives you a build-up like this, your biggest fear is, what if I'm not funny? What if I won't be funny?
You are always funny. And
It's a lot
back.
Of pressure.
It's not pressure. You don't have to be funny through this section. Hello? Tell me, how did you get started in comedy?
Getting started coming here was a big thing. I washed my hair.
Oh, that's nice.
No, I came from, my father truly is was the funniest person I ever knew in my entire life. And I grew up in a very funny house with a funny, funny father. But I didn't think about being a comedian at all. I was a high school English teacher.
You're kidding. I never knew that.
I had to leave. I couldn't handle the money and prestige. No, I really was. I really was. I was a high school English teacher.
What grade?
High school. What grade did you get complete?
Well, it's 10, 11, 12. Which one of those?
Well, I taught 10, 11, and 12. But the funny thing is I entered college very young. I really did. I New York has SP. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, let me just tell the audience that there are two dogs in the studio with us that are, if you hear growling in the background, it's not.
It's my stomach. He doesn't feed me.
So they have SP.
SP is, no, that's a sports award, Steve. Oh. The SP. SP, it's Special Progress in New York where you do, it's for the really gifted kids.
I didn't know. I was making coffee tables in high school, you know, with the press, with the drill press, and I was not in the gifted class.
No, but in junior high, you do 7th, 8th, and 9th grade in 2 years. So, if you're in that program. So I did that. Mm-hmm. So I entered college at 16.
Oh, my God.
I know.
You were jailbait.
I know.
Where did you go to college?
Boston University. That's where I got my New York accent.
You went to Boston, BU?
Yes, I did.
Do you know I'm from Boston?
No, Steve. None of us knows that you're from Boston. We don't read your posts. We don't hear about Boston 6 times a day. But really, you're shitting me.
Yeah, no, I'm from Boston. What years were you in? No. 1847 to 1892. You actually met Benjamin Franklin, isn't that right?
That was unbelievable. Lightning struck.
You know, when they pushed the tea over, it was Monica. So
anyway, how did this come about?
So you were a high school teacher.
I was a high school teacher. Oh, the whole point was that I became a teacher at 20. I was teaching high school. So I had kids that were 18.
Oh, wow.
Boys, you know. They had the, I'd sit on top of the desk and talk. I was very conversational and funny.
Yeah.
And they had the pencil dropping club, they called it. Oh. Kid would drop a pencil and they would all, and he would reach down to pick up his pencil.
And you were, you're really short. So they have to get like on the ground.
That's right. But anyway, it was great, actually. I love teaching, and it was very much like stand-up. You know, it was like 5 sets a day.
What? Sure, and you stand
hecklers.
Up.
Hecklers.
Don't get paid by the club owner.
You suck!
Do you know, I think Kathy Ladman was a teacher, too.
I don't know.
Kathy, I think, was also an English teacher. And the reason I know that is she's always correcting my English. I'll do 14 posts on Facebook, and everyone won't say, Kathy will come back. There's a comma after household.
I do that too. I'm terrible. So, I don't like people who... I can't say I don't like them. I love people, but I don't like when people don't know how to spell.
Well, I'm dyslexic, so you can kiss my ass. Spelled A-S-K-R.
Kiss my sa.
So you were a teacher. And
by the way, you know, I was thinking about this the other day. If you live in Claremont, because I drove past Claremont on my way somewhere, it's like 2 miles from Montclair.
Right, they're Montclair and Claremont. They're the same cities.
So, like, if you're dyslexic, you could literally never find your way home. You'd be going, that must be it. No way. Okay, I'm sorry.
No, that's very funny. So, one day you were in class and you said, fuck it, I'm going to be a comic.
No, I actually, while I was teaching, I started doing improv at night. This was in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And I started doing improv at night. And I started doing improv with a group at the Holy City Zoo.
Right.
And so while I was there, I'd be watching Dana Carvey and Robin and all these, you know, like great Jeremy Kramer, just really funny, funny people. And I said, I didn't think I could do that. But it took a while to get the guts to do it. So I took a year's leave of absence from teaching. And just started trying to do stand-up.
No, it's so funny because I also come from improvisation. I was in the original class that became the Groundlings.
Oh, wow.
And so all my skills on stage, I learned trust and give and take and all those things doing improv with the Groundlings. And a lot of people don't understand that stand-up is an acting job, basically. Because you have to make what you're saying sound like you've said it. It's the first time you're saying it, even though you've said it every night for 6 weeks on the road.
Exactly. It's true. But there's a dilemma, because you always want the spontaneity of doing something really new and off the cuff. So because you have a background in improv, and I have a background, that's why if anything happens in the room, we're on it. You know, you can relate to it. You can make someone in the audience says something stupid, you can riff with them.
Yes. I was on stage at some club, I can't remember where, and they had rigged the stage for a magician who was following me and hadn't told me. So I'd be walking back and forth, and all of a sudden a puff of smoke would come up or a rabbit would run across the stage, and I look off to the side of the stage, and the magician was pulling his hair out because no one had told me, so I was petrified too. But it was one of the funniest nights, because like I would step on something and a big puff of smoke would come up and I would scream, you know, like, we're being bombed.
Oh, see, Steve, these are moments I would have loved to have seen you. Just be your raw, natural, hilarious self.
Oh, thanks.
As opposed to right now. But anyway, no, but you know, you saw the video of me falling off the stage.
Yes, I did.
If any of you have not seen it, it's 13 seconds. Go on YouTube. It's called Monica Piper Epic Fall. I was opening for Lucy Arnaz. The audience was 55 and over. It was a senior audience.
So there were a lot of walkers in the audience.
And this very old gentleman introduced me. He was like 92. And he kept moving the podium. He was behind a podium. He kept moving it up like a walker, you know. And he got to the edge of the stage. And Lucy Arnaz and her entire orchestra were behind the curtain. The curtain had to be closed. I had 3 feet, literally, to move in. And the lights around the stage went out. The little lights that tell you that's the end of the stage. Anyway, you got to watch this video. I promise you, not only will you laugh, you'll go, ha! Everybody does. I walk on stage, I go, thank you, Les. Let's have a hand for Les. Hey, ah!
I did see it, and I did do exactly that.
I fell 6 feet.
Oh, wow.
Now, the reality is, I literally could have died if I landed differently.
On your neck,
I landed on my neck or my back, I seriously bruised my foot. But I got right back on the stage because I hadn't done any material, nothing. So, what do you see? You know, I said, you know, they told me to break a leg, but that's ridiculous. You know? And then it was old people, so I said, the good news is I have all these grandmas here who, you know, are you okay? I don't even remember, but... God, I wish I had said something funny.
No, you did say something funny.
No, but, and then Lucy Arnaz sticks her head out from behind the curtain to give me arnica so I don't bruise. And the funniest thing is, this was the one show I was having videoed.
Of course.
For my website.
Of course.
So now my hair's all over the place and I don't know it. My shirt is completely going in the wrong direction. And she gives me these things to chew on.
Right.
She goes, take these right away so you don't bruise. So I went, thank you. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, Lucy Arnaz, not only a singer, a dancer, a fabulous actress, she's now apparently a drug dealer.
A paramedic.
I mean, you know, you got to say something in those moments.
Well,
she gave me the arnica, and I did the rest of my show like, chewing arnica like this. And that's my videotape.
Well, what is your website so the listeners can...
Oh, well, it needs to be updated. It's monicapiper.com. But it is mainly, at the moment, the website is about my speaking, you know, the speaking thing I do for corporations, which is called Find the Funny. But right now, I'm traveling all over the country doing... for Mish, for Klempt, and for Blunget, which is, that you don't even know what I've been doing.
What is it?
It's a blend of stand-up and storytelling, and it's four stories blended into stand-up.
Come in!
Sorry, something I ate. And it's all stories that were commissioned originally by the Jewish Women's Theater of Los Angeles, and they're great. They're funny, funny as hell. But unlike stand-up, I can deal with, you know, one of them deals with living with cancer and a teenager at the same time.
Well, we did a spoken word evening together. Is that one of the...
That's the story I did that
night. Oh, it's really wonderful. It's funny and it's touching. And it got huge laughs. And as she's leaving the stage, she turns to me and says, follow that.
You know, I thought about that and I said, God, you're such a bitch. Why would
that was
you,
exactly my thought.
Why would you say that to anybody? And I was just joking because it's you.
I know.
You know, I wouldn't say it to anyone else.
And all through it, I started reading because my piece... it was about something that happened to me in Paris, and the first 10 minutes of it are all set up, and all through that I'm going, I'm gonna bomb, they're not gonna like me, and in my head is all this I'm hearing is follow that. And I was so happy when I got hit the punchline and they laughed.
Oh, you killed with that story.
All right, so let me ask you, let's get back to the stand-up.
Yeah.
So you left school, you went to the improv, and when did you get up on stage as a stand-up?
Well, I moved down here not to do stand-up. I fell in love with a saxophone player. Well, actually, I came down here to be with a guy that I met up there who lived down here. And while I was with that guy, I met the saxophone player. And so...
Such a complex woman.
So I ended up moving here to be with him. And because I had taken a leave of absence...
leave of absence of your senses.
So I got a job at the Great American Food and Beverage Company, where all the waiters and waitresses sing. And Katie Sagal came from there. And
really?
Yeah, a lot of people.
Oh, that's
a lot of
great.
Great people. Anyway, so I started doing a talking blues while I was there. And then I would sit on the piano late at night and start... talking and trying stand-up. So I did that. I mean, I was really lucky. I didn't have to go to clubs or anything. I had the restaurant. I was getting paid, getting tips.
Wow.
But I was writing stand-up and performing it there.
So it was tested when you went to the clubs?
Every night. So when I went to audition at the Comedy Store, I had what I thought was a good 5-10 minutes. So, she put me in the belly room right away.
Well, for people who don't know, the Comedy Store was originally the small casino, not casino, but showroom on the first floor. Mitzi Shore then bought the entire building because that room was doing so well. She pushed the wall back into the main room. They made the original room larger, and then there was a lounge upstairs that was not being used, and Mitzi turned it into what was called the belly room because it was the belly of the Comedy Store and made it specifically for women comics. And when she did it, I think there were 4 women comics at the time who were regulars at the, it was all men, and Mitzi opened the door to women comedians making their lives a living hell.
Yeah, it was a living hell, but it was also, how great was it? I mean, when I was there, this is when I met Lotus Weinstock, Diane Nichols, Carrie Snow, Sue Kalinske, Lucy Webb, Joanne Deering. You know, I mean, it was so great.
Yeah.
And, but I'll never forget. Am I allowed to say, should I? Yeah, well, what the hell? This is a long time ago. Someone gave me, and myself and my friend Kay, mushrooms.
Mm.
And I had never done mushrooms. And we did the mushrooms. And and I don't know how, but we ended up in Hollywood. And we're walking around. We're near the Comedy Store. And we run into a female comedian who was also in the belly room. I probably shouldn't say her name at this point.
Initials.
No.
All right.
Anyway, so we're walking, and she said, "Hey, how's it going? Did you get your schedule this week?" And I had just found out that I was doing my first spot in the original room.
Mm-hmm.
I had actually got invited to leave the belly room. So I said, yeah, I got a spot in the original room. And you know, when you're on mushrooms, time stands still and you can see all the truth behind someone's face. And so it was like, oh, that's really wonderful. I'm so happy for you. But we could see it. Kay and I, it was like fangs were coming out. It was really scary. But anyway, so
I have never, ever worked on drugs in all the years I did.
No, I didn't work.
No, but I was
working.
One time, someone gave me cocaine before the show.
Jeez.
And I thought, I was, because all my friends, it was the 70s people, all the time, all my friends were working on coke. And I was so excited to get on stage. And when I got on stage, I did 45 minutes worth of material in 8.5 minutes. You know how you're supposed to ride the wave of the crest of the laugh? I was like always in ahead of it. You know, they were just about to laugh and I was telling the next joke. It was the worst experience of my life. And I got off, and I was waiting to get on stage. I was going, okay, can't wait to get on stage. I can't wait to. And someone turned and said, what the hell is wrong with you? And of course, I thought that was totally normal, but I never did it again.
It probably was for 90% of the comics in the 80s.
Real 70s. It was late 70s. So you went on to...
But no, when I auditioned, the first time I auditioned for Mitzi, and she goes, that's very funny, and, now, come to the belly room Saturday night and do 20 minutes. I had 5 minutes. I had 5 minutes that took me...
5 minutes of material.
I had 5 minutes that took me a year. And I had 2 days to come up with 15 more. Do you know what I did? I swear. I went up and down the aisles of the supermarket I'm looking for anything to give me inspiration. Oh, it was bad, you know.
And like, what did you do?
Oh, God, I got queen-size pantyhose. And did something about that. And, you know, I was like a prop comic for a while.
Oh, well, but you did, but that's what the Comedy Store was all about back then. It was like developing. Mitzi had an eye for comic. She told me, "You're not a stand-up, Steve," which is exactly what I wanted to hear. And it took me 30 years to figure out she was right. I'm a writer. I love writing.
But you're a great stand-up. You're hilarious.
But yeah, but I don't enjoy doing it. You know, I don't enjoy going to Haha Indiana to work at Teehee's Comedy Tent.
Yeah. People always say to me, "Where can I see you in town?" And if I have new material, if I have a bunch of new stuff that I want to try out, I'll try it out in town. But I won't try it. I'm not going to try it out at the Laugh Factory or the Improv. I'll try it somewhere where.
And the reason being is that sometimes there's industry people there who would be judging you for the material. And if you're doing new material and it doesn't work, it's not good. I started breaking in material on the road.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
So you,
I'm not going really on the road anymore. I'm traveling like crazy, but yeah. I'm doing, you know, I'm doing this show for
right.
For Clempton for Blunget.
Well, and but you did. You opened for some headliners, right?
Oh yeah, Neil Sedaka and Gloria Estefan and the Smothers Brothers and Glenn Campbell, like. You know, that was great. That was at Harrah's and
right. And you worked Vegas and Reno and Tahoe. And,
yes.
I mean, that's the mark of a comedian. I mean, you've done it.
You done it, but
you went from a teacher to a stand-up comedian on stage.
But then I left and became, you know, I was a writer for television for a long time.
We all do that because yeah. At some point you go, if I have to see another hotel room, I'm going to kill myself. And some comic, I don't know who it is, he said he was on the road so much that when he was home, he would go into his own bathroom and say, "Look how big the soap is!"
I when I'm home, I can't believe I'm using the same towels the next day.
Well, you know, the thing is that noise that you people are hearing is my computer telling me someone is leaving me something on Facebook, and if I was astute at this, I would shut that off. But all right, so would you say that the transition? Because I was assistant buyer for the Maid Company, and I went from there to the Comedy Store, and within 2 years, I was opening in the Sahara.
Mm-hmm.
So it's much different today than it was when we started, wouldn't you say? In terms of comedy and the way the kids are doing it today.
Well, I think every now and then somebody comes along that you know has really got it.
Intrinsically funny.
But, you know, I don't want to sound prudy, but, you know, there's a lot of dick jokes around, and there's a lot of, you know, it's still about jerking off, and it just funny's funny. You know who makes me laugh out loud? If you've never... Dana Carvey Live slays me.
Yeah.
And people just think he's, you know, Wayne's World or Church Lady. He is so intrinsically funny. His body, his movements, his physicality, he makes me laugh out loud. Louis C.K. makes me laugh.
Right.
I think he's really a genius, but...
Well, you know, sometimes the groundlings will ask me to teach a class in stand-up, and the one thing that I say to the people is, you know, everyone's doing dick jokes. And the secret to becoming a successful stand-up is to stand out from the crowd. So if you go there and you're doing the same dick jokes that everybody else is doing, they're not going to notice you. What you have to do is do material that makes people think or makes people go, "Oh, yeah, I remembered that." Or that, or what makes them laugh is the showing the irony of what's going on in their lives.
But it's also, you know, you also have to decide between the rawness. You know, some people can get up there and just really talk. The opposite of what we were saying before, that you know your act, you say your act 100 times, but you have to make it feel fresh, like it's the first time. But then the other side of that is people who just talk and have a funny idea, but there's no craft. Mm-hmm. There's no craft. And it drives me crazy if someone's telling you something and it's, yeah, you know, then she came home, you know, and I, you know, went, you know, crazy. And it, did you actually write all those you knows in there? Comedy is jazz. People don't, it's the timing, it's everything. I'll deliberate over a two-syllable word or a three-syllable word because I know that the two-syllable word in this case is going to be funnier than a three-syllable word.
I mean,
a cadence thing.
It's so wonderful to hear somebody else say it, because I've been saying for years that fast is funny, and I actually, in the beginning, I wrote down, I would do a show, then I would come home, and I would type out my act, every and I would go back, and I would listen to the laughs, and I would rate them, a 7, a 10, a 9, a 1, whatever. And so I had a roadmap of what I was saying, and where it was working, and where it wasn't. And I would then take out all the ums and and if I said, I walked into the room, I would change it to, I entered, because it's faster. And that's exactly what you're saying. And today, they don't do that.
And it's not, it's words, it's how fast you are, okay. But it's also, I mean, everyone says comedy is timing. But comedy is timing, you know. And I don't know if you... For me, it's intrinsic. My father just had this funny way of delivering everything. But it's like
so do his daughter.
Yeah. I do this this joke about how great it is to, when you're in a 5-star hotel, how they have to give you anything you want. You know, hello, room service, this is Monica Piper. I'd like a cheeseburger and a pony. That's the joke. But I tried it once without that slight pause. Before, yeah, like a cheeseburger and a pony. It's not quite, it's not going to get the same laugh as I like a cheeseburger and a pony. You know.
Well, it's, but that's what I'm talking about, is someone who actually understands the craft of comedy and feels it in their heart that that little beat, a pony, is what will make it laugh. And other people don't have that. You know, there are people working that don't have that.
A lot of people.
But, well, you know, we're almost. I can't believe that 30 minutes goes by so quickly. Really, do you have anything you'd just like to sum up in the last, like, tell people where you're going to be?
Well, let's see. Friday, the 7th, I'm flying to Fairfax, Virginia to perform at the Northern Virginia JCC. It's a big, big, huge fundraising event. And I'll be doing my show there March 1st. I'm doing a retreat for Wilshire Boulevard Temple. I know it sounds like I'm just like on the Jew circuit. Oh, if you're in Florida, the condo circuit, I'm opening for Lucy Arnaz March 5th through 9th. Oh. Hopefully I won't fall off the stage.
You've just done more work in 2 months than I've done in the last 6 years. It's true.
And I'm writing a movie with Sue Kalinske.
Yes, Sue Kalinske, another funny, intrinsically funny person.
Intrinsically funny.
So I want to thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, you've always been one of my favorites. And when I started the podcast, I knew that I wanted to have you on in the first three, and you're number three. There were two people better than you. So,
who each said, follow that.
Well, this is Steve Bluestein and
Monica Piper.
And we want to thank you for listening to our conversation. Come back next week when we have another one. Good night.